There's a person who can spot threats in the sky before they become threats. They can reassemble a pistol in 15 seconds and maintain equipment so advanced most don't even know it exists. That person's you. There are more than 50 roles to choose from in the RAF. You'll receive world-class training to develop new and existing skills. And you can do it full-time as a regular or in your spare time as a reservist. Find your role in the RAF. Search RAF Recruitment now.
No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspective, this is Revenge of the Birds.
Good evening, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio, and I am your host, Jess Root, here on a Tuesday evening, following yet another Arizona Cardinals victory as they defeated the Jacksonville Jaguars on Sunday by a score of 27-14, making that their third straight victory, improving their record to 6-4. They've now completed a three-game stretch in which after that loss to Seattle, where you looked at the schedule and said, look at those three games. They're very winnable. They kind of needed to win all three of them, and they did. And now they move into another segment of the schedule. But tonight, guys, again, this is Revenge of the Birds Radio. Thank you for listening if you're listening to us live. If you are listening to the downloaded version, likewise, thank you very much. I hope you are enjoying the show. If you would like to join in the conversation, call in with comments, questions, takes, give us a call, 646-478-3787. That's 646-478-3787. We have a good show lined up for you guys tonight as Seth Cox will join us on the line shortly as we're going to go back over the game. And talk a little bit about moving forward as the Arizona Cardinals officially are smack dab now as we enter week 12 in the NFC playoff race. And we'll talk about that a little bit as kind of getting some play around the league, around the local airwaves as the Cardinals are finally, believe it or not, after years of struggle, have finally put themselves in a situation where they basically control their destiny. If they keep winning, they're in. As they have some key games down the stretch. It's by no means is this a sure thing. As they come up over the next several weeks, they are going to close the season out with their final six games. Looking at this week, they host the Indianapolis Colts. And by no means is that a cupcake game. And there's no guarantee. And while the Colts are not playing as well as they had been earlier in the season, Wayne, that is by no means a guaranteed win. Then they go on the road to Philadelphia. Then they have the Rams at home. They have Tennessee on the road. They have Seattle on the road and will close out their season at home in week 17 against the San Francisco 49ers, with whom the Cardinals are currently tied record-wise in the division. Naturally, 49ers have have the tiebreak as they played head-to-head and Arizona lost that game in San Francisco. But what do we have for tonight? Well, first off, we've got the win by the Cardinals. Their 6-4 record is right where you perhaps expected them to be. It's more or less what I figured they would be as a talking head in the media, as a fan. We're allowed, and it is perfectly okay for us to go through and look at a schedule and kind of pencil in wins and stack wins and see where the wins are going to come from. I predicted this before the season that the Cardinals would end up a 9-17, just missing the playoffs, that the current situation has it that it very well could end up being that exact situation. We hope that is not the situation. But we're going to move forward. What do we have tonight? We're going to talk about the game a little bit, what happened, and in fact, a little bit of the news that's going on. I'm going to talk about just how worried that first half was against the Jaguars when they came out and scored and actually had a lead for a little bit. Talk about the defense and how they started and how they bounced back, even, as it's important. And then kind of the man of the day of Sunday, which was Carson Palmer, who has been kind of been the butt of many jokes. And while he's been playing better than the quarterbacks we had here, he certainly has not been spectacular. However, you look over the last three games and you've got yourself a pretty solid play. We're going to talk about Michael Floyd's performance, his touchdown, his performance, and perhaps talk about his future as a number one, perhaps. And then we're going to get, then yes, we'll get into that playoff talk. But first off, we have Seth Cox on the line, so we're going to welcome Seth to the show tonight. How are you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm good, Jess. How are you?
Doing great. Glad to have you on. It's going to be the two of us tonight. Ben, unfortunately, was unable to make the show tonight as he has other business he is attending to. So we wish him well, and we will welcome him back next week. Again, this is Revenge of the Birds Radio. You have Jess Root. I'm Jess Root, your host, along the line with Seth Cox, both from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, our SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site. If you would like to give us a call, talk about what's on your mind with the Arizona Cardinals, give us a call at 646-478-3787. If you're not near a telephone and you'd like to chime in, give us your thoughts, you can also find me on Twitter. Go ahead and send me a tweet at me at Senor Jess Root, or the site account at Revenge of Birds. And likewise, if you're listening to the show on the downloaded archived version and you've got something to say, of course, you can still send us a tweet. You can visit the website, revengeofthebirds.com, and join in on the conversation. Sign up for a free account and become one of our members there on the site. One of the many members, great community that we have there as we talk here with some of Cardinals, where there's great content daily about the going-ons of the team. We had a little bit of news today to start things off. As we know, Teddy Williams, if you followed what happened during the game, special teams guy and speedy receiver, Teddy Williams, whom the Cardinals signed just a couple of weeks ago, he tore his Achilles during the game and was lost for the rest of the season. In fact, it kind of put the special teams play unit a little bit in a bit of situation, as both gunners on punt coverage ended up being out of the game. Williams being lost to the Achilles injury, and Justin Bethel after taking a hit on a block that was called deemed illegal and flagged. He left the game with a concussion, though he seems to be recovering well. So Teddy Williams been placed on injured reserve in his place on the roster. The Cardinals today signed cornerback Brian McCann, who was signed during the offseason to a one-year contract and was with the team during training camp. He ended up being cut before the season began, but I would imagine that his history has been that of a special teams player. He has experience returning punts, returning kicks, but he also has played a gunner role before. In fact, he played when you were if you were down in Glendale and saw him during training camp that he was one of the guys that ran punt coverage as a gunner, not with the first group, but I believe was the second group with Tyrann Mathieu at the time. And so the Cardinals have a new member of the team, a guy that has already been with the team, so is a little bit familiar with the situation. There was one of the readers on the site actually suggested perhaps Jonathan Amaya would be back, and that was a good call. I thought perhaps that might be, as he is also a special teams guy. And as we get off to the start, we talk about the game that happened on Sunday. It didn't start out all that great for the Cardinals as they had the Jaguars. They started off, they had them stopped them on a third down, then they're left with a fourth and one. What do you know? The old problem of covering a tight end came into play again as a fourth and one play ended up going for a 62-yard touchdown pass for the Jaguars to take a 7-0 lead. The Cardinals answered with a drive of their own. Carson Palmer driving the team down the field. They tied the game at 7. However, the defense did not respond particularly well early. Jacksonville drove again, got down to the goal line, had them stopped, and it looked like they were going to hold them to a field goal. However, Jeremiah Bell flagged for taunting, and that gave the Jaguars new life. They punched it into the end zone, taking a 14-7 lead. And the first half, there was a little bit of worry. They rallied a bit as they drove down the field to tie the score before halftime. And then in the second half, pulled away. It wasn't a pretty win, but it was a road win. And for some of the historians out there, it happened to be the first time in the history of the Arizona Cardinals when they managed to pull out a pair of wins in one season in Florida, having defeated Tampa Bay earlier in the season. So as we go back over things, some of the issues that they had, the stat-wise, is we have what the Arizona Cardinals did particularly well. They actually kind of relied on their offense to start off the game. The running game wasn't there. At final box score, they ran for a total of 14 yards, and all of those 14 yards came from Rashard Mendenhall. Andre Ellington carried 9 times for 3 yards. Rashard Mendenhall had 12 carries for 14 yards, and then Carson Palmer had the 3 kneel downs late in the game to close it out for the total of 14 yards. However, Carson Palmer had his finest day as a Cardinal at the first game. It took him 10 games. However, he did not throw an interception for the first time all season. He finished 30 of 42 for a total of 419 passing yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 to Michael Floyd, 1 to Larry Fitzgerald, and a passer rating of 119. He is currently up for voting. He is one of the candidates for the week, for the basically the passer of the week, for the quarterback of the week. And so you can go on NFL.com and vote for that. Receiving-wise, he had Michael Floyd, who had 6 catches for 193 yards and a touchdown, which was a 91-yard catch and run. Rob Houser had another solid game, 6 catches for 70 yards. Larry Fitzgerald actually very quietly had 6 receptions for 61 yards. And then defensively, they held Maurice Jones-Drew to a total of 23 yards. And it was a little bit worrisome in the second half, as it was not the blowout Arizona Cardinals fans would have liked to have had. But as we go and get started, we're going to let Seth join in the conversation. Again, this is Revenge of the Birds Radio. If you want to call in and join in, interrupt Seth and me as we discuss the game that happened and the things going forward, what's going on now, give us a call, 6464-783-787. But if you're listening to the archived version, of course, you won't be able to do that. But keep in mind the next time that we're on live. So, Seth, how worried were you in that first half with the way the Cardinals were playing? Did it look like a game that – now you had going into the game, you had picked the Jacksonville – you picked the Jaguars to win the game. How much of that, when you made that pick, was more about superstition and hoping for the Cardinals to win? Or how much did you actually believe in that pick that you thought Jacksonville would come away with a victory?
I didn't think that they had any chance, and you never want to say anything like that because it's anything can happen in the NFL, and we've seen it with the Cardinals when they were, the Cardinals of old, and so you never want to say that, but I didn't think they had any chance. It was just Sean and I had the conversation, and they had a better record when I pick against them, so I just continued the trend and hope for the best there.
So when the touchdown, that early touchdown on 4th-and-1, how worried were you, especially when Jacksonville took that 7-0 lead and then a 14-7 lead? How much did you go from there's no way the Cardinals can lose this game to oh crap? Did that happen to you at all in the first half? Because it certainly did for me.
You know, more of a concern for me in the first half was the defense and the inability to get stops against maybe the worst offensive unit in the NFL. I mean, that Jaguars offense, and they have some nice pieces, but, Justin Blackman is suspended for the year, and Luke Jokel is, you know, on injured reserve, so it's not like it's – I mean, it's very similar to the 2012 Cardinals offense in that case. And the fact that it was, you know, a guy that I really had never heard of, and that's probably on me, but in this Noble guy that went out and caught the 67-yard touchdown pass and then – and then just the stupid play by Jeremiah Bell to take a dumb penalty at a really bad time on the goal line like that. You know, it wasn't so much concern as it was, you know, frustration, because, you know, you expect this team that is pretty veteran heavy on the defensive side of the ball to not do stupid things, and both of those plays were mental errors. One, it looked like Patrick Peterson. I didn't listen to what the coaches said, but on the film review, to me, it looked like Patrick Peterson got lost in coverage and didn't know who he was supposed to take, and then obviously the mental mistake by Jeremiah Bell. You know, it's just more frustrating to me that team, you know, even at 5-4 before the game started, that they believe that they were good enough just to show up on the field and win. And that was more troubling to me than any of the actual play.
And now on that play on the touchdown, I don't know if I haven't gone back and looked back on film, but when they showed on the television, it looked like perhaps, whether it was Peterson, I don't know, but Tyrann Mathieu and Carlos Dansby ended up running after the same guy coming out of the backfield to covers. So at least initially to me, it looked like Mathieu probably should have picked up the tight end, and Peterson was left, and he was the one that looked lost because, whoops. Honestly, I was surprised that – it didn't surprise me that happened, but it kind of was the old bugaboo again as I was on NFL Network today. They were talking about fantasy football, and the Cardinals have by far been the worst team against tight ends. So – any fantasy football people out there, stats say, hey, start Kobe Fleener this weekend. The Cardinals have given up the most points to tight ends in the entire league. I was honestly surprised that Mercedes Lewis didn't perform a little bit better, because he's that type of player that would put up some numbers. He's been one of those players that's had some production and hasn't fully done what he was expected, kind of a Rob Hausler type. In his career, an unfulfilled potential. Well, at least we're starting to see that now. Personally, when I saw the first half, I was like, oh boy. I didn't think that the Cardinals would end up losing, but I was certainly worried there for a while. I felt that probably would come back, and it wouldn't take much to squish the Jaguars, or to take a bad play here or there for them to kind of pack up shop and go home. Especially with the way the defense tends to come out after in the second half, or how they respond to things. That's one theme that's been, and one of the things we're actually going to talk about is the defense, for some reason, doesn't come out usually with the same intensity and the same effectiveness as they do after until they get their, I guess they get punched in the. Take a fist to the face where they jaw and their mouth gets bloodied a little bit, and then they realize, oh, I've got to do something. So I was worried. It certainly put me uneasy. I didn't think they were going to lose, but I was certainly uneasy. Talking about the defense, what do you think it is about this defense? Now, aside from the game against Houston where they made the impact play on that first play from scrimmage with the John Abraham sack and fumble, forced fumble with the Shaughnessy touchdown, The defense really has been a case of things happening and then reacting and doing really well, making incredible adjustments after that. What do you think of the defense? What do you think the reason is why they don't tend to come out stronger at the beginning of games?
You know, I've went back and I've watched a couple of games. Well, I watch every game afterwards, but I went back this weekend and actually watched a couple games. And one of the things I kind of noticed was that I feel like Bowles isn't as aggressive when the game begins as he is as the game is going on. I think he really lets the game come to him first, so to speak, and then makes adjustments in that case, and then gets kind of his game plan rolling, as opposed to kind of coming out and forcing his, you know, forcing the offensive team or the offense's hand for the other team, and then allowing them to go back in and kind of scheme for the rest of the game. I feel like he does almost the opposite, where they play a lot of base, they play a lot of, you know, more traditional coverages and things like that, and then as the game starts to go along and he figures out kind of what the offense is doing, then he begins to put those exotic looks in on the back end and bring pressure from different angles and do things like that. So whereas Ray Horton was more aggressive at the front end of the defense, I think Todd Bowles is more aggressive typically on the back end of a game and after he feels comfortable that he's got a beat on what the teams are doing.
And personally, I kind of like that philosophy, except I wish they would come out and be able to be more effective at the start, but their adjustments have been fantastic. Looking here, this is the third time this season that the Cardinals have held an opponent scoreless in the second half. The only other teams to do that this season are Kansas City, Carolina, and Pittsburgh. Now, Pittsburgh always has the reputation of a very good defense. They haven't had the great season. However, you look, Kansas City, They've had one heck of a season, in Carolina, who last lost when they lost the Cardinals back in October, at the beginning of October, the hottest team in the league right now. Granted, against the teams that they did it against haven't been exactly world beaters, because one was the Jaguars, one was the Buccaneers. But, I mean, you look at it, this is a team that really adjusts well, and when they realize what they need to do, they just clamp it down, and that's it. If they look at Jacksonville's second half possessions, they scored on their first two possessions, what it turned out. So they had 8 punts, 2 interceptions, a missed field goal, and then one that ended on downs, is how the other 12 possessions remained. And even the one missed field goal, that was a long field goal. I mean, when you're going for a 60-yarder, you never know, it's going to go either way. But they allowed over in the second half only 129 yards total on those 35 plays. And it's really kind of been the trademark of this defense, is where once they get a beat on that, and I like the idea of what Bowles said. In fact, there was a stat that ran across today, is the takeaway, say what you want about how they've done in some of the games, especially against the tight end. The Todd Bowles has really schemed very well with the defensive backs, as they have gotten their hands on more balls than anyone else in the league. And I believe they have, 53 combined passes defensed and interceptions, whereas last season they combined for a total of 66. Seth, before we move on, we've got a caller on the line. Let's see who we got on the line. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. Thank you for calling. Who I have on the line? Hello, thanks for calling Revenge of the Birds Radio. Who I got on the line tonight? You're talking to Jess and Seth. Whoop. Guess he didn't want to talk. We lost the call there. So getting back to the... would you say that this pass defense is improved over last season? Now, that was actually one of the biggest, other than we take away the tight end issues, if you look at the defensive secondary, we saw that probably it was a downgrade over last year when you go from Wilson and Rhodes to Jeremiah Bell and Rashad Johnson, and now it's Tyrann Mathieu. Patrick Peterson stays the same. You go from Willie Gay to Jerrod Powers. How surprised are you at how this defensive backfield has turned out?
Well, you know, when you look at Todd's history as in the league, one of the things he has always done is coach up defensive backs. So I think I'm more surprised about how well, you know, they're doing in a vacuum, I guess you could call it. I mean, they give up a lot of yards, but they don't give up a ton of touchdowns, which is nice to see. And they do a good job of, you know, kind of compensating for their deficiencies. They don't have great coverage linebackers. Even Darrell Washington's not a great coverage linebacker, but he does a really good job, you know, in doing different things and being able to at least run with guys. And then the safety position with Jeremiah Bell, and you know, is really needing an upgrade. So he does a really good job of coaching up his talent, whereas I think Horton more so just let his talent kind of do what they needed to do to make plays. Not saying he wasn't coaching them, obviously, just there were different philosophies in how to go about it, and I think that's been kind of what has spurred this great job by the defense on the back end, especially in coverages. Having a probably a top 7 cornerback in the league and Patrick Peterson obviously makes things a little bit easier when you're able to just say, hey, Patrick, this is your guy for the game. Patrick's given up a lot of touchdowns this year, and he's had some, you know, issues and so-so games, but he's also, you know, had some great games against great competition, and that's really all you can ask from a guy that's your number one. And Jerod Powers is, you know, he's another one that you is an obvious, you know, needed an upgrade, but you know, for a number two guy, he hasn't been terrible. And you know, obviously Tyrann Mathieu is a very good, you know, nickel guy in the slot, and despite giving up a lot of catches, he does a great job of, you know, I've said this before, but I think he might be the best tackler on the team. And so he's, you know, it's a really eclectic group talent-wise, and they do a really good job of playing to all the people's, you know, all the player strengths, and not, you know, not scheming their guys into problems like maybe we saw last year with Horton and William Gay or Adrian Wilson at times.
Again, we have a caller. Looks like the same guy's trying to call in, so let's get him on the line, see what he's got to say. You were on the air. It's Revenge of the Birds Radio. You're talking to Jess and Seth. Who I have on the line tonight?
Hello.
Yes, hello. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. How are you guys?
Doing pretty well. What's on your mind tonight, man?
No, I'm just wondering, how do you guys see the offense playing against the Colts this week on Sunday? Especially Carson Palmer is playing pretty decent in the last three games, only throwing two interceptions on the Falcons and Texans.
All right, we'll take it from there. That's actually what we're going to be talking about next, and it's talking about the play of Carson Palmer. So he's now, over those last three games, 6 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, including the 0 interceptions that he threw against the Jags. Seth, let's give you the question. How do you see the Cardinals, assuming Carson Palmer can maintain the level of decision-making that he's had over the past three games, how will the Cardinals fare against the Colts, especially with the pass rush that they have with Robert Mathis?
You know, you look at what the Colts defense is, and they're kind of a slightly, I don't even know how to put it. They're not really good, first off. They're not a very good defense. They have a ton of gaping holes. They have needs in the secondary. You can definitely take advantage of them in the passing game, but they're even worse against the run. They're ranked 25th by Football Outsiders, you know, versus the run. And they've struggled. What they do is they kind of, you know, they're kind of a mini Detroit team in the sense that they just outscore people, but you know, they don't have the defensive line of a Detroit or anybody like that. So what it's going to come down to for Palmer is again, not, you know, keeping the mistakes to a minimum. I wasn't complete despite the win, I was not completely thrilled with Arians' game plan, and far be it from me to, you know, question a coach and what he's doing. I just don't like giving a guy like Carson Palmer 42 passing attempts. That's just not something that I'm in favor of. So that was, you know, that was weird to watch for me. But, you know, Palmer came through against the worst pass defense in the NFL, and if that's, you know, if I guess that's what the scheme was. They're the, you know, like I said, they're the Jaguars were the worst defense in the NFL against the pass. So if you're going to get your passing game kind of on track, so to speak, that would, this was obviously the week to do it. And I think it's going to carry over. I don't know necessarily if they're going to be as successful because the Colts are a slight upgrade, but you know, it'll be interesting. Outside of Mathis, they have some players, but they don't have a ton of players that you look at and go, wow, we need to scheme for this guy. Wow, we need to, you know, watch out for this guy. And they're similar to the Jaguars in that way, except for they do have Mathis, who, you know, is a one-man wrecking crew as a pass rusher.
And looking at it myself, looking up and down that roster, now they do have – they do have some talent. It's not, it's kind of there's a whole bunch of talent back there that's been not fulfilled completely. You've got Greg Toler at cornerback, who has looked, well, at least when he was with the Cardinals, looked great, but then we get hurt. You've got Laron Landry, who's kind of your, they're in the defensive backfield, kind of your poster child for talent that hasn't quite gotten it all there. But yeah, they've got a scrappy group of defenders back there, and I really like the fact that Carson's been playing better, and he played against the defense, the worst defense in the NFL when it came to passing. But if you look at what he did, he didn't mess things up. Yes, there was the one would-be interception, but Arians, you know, he called timeout before the play. He realized that, yeah, he needed to not make that decision, that play call, and Palmer, and they got the – so it ended up being a very, very good decision. But I kind of like how the Cardinals will match up, especially since they – despite the – kind of say you don't want them throwing the ball 42 times, it wasn't like the Cardinals didn't try to run the ball. Even still, they attempted 24 – they will take the three kneel downs. They attempted – they had 21 rushing attempts, and with those 21 rushing attempts, they netted themselves 17 yards. So I can see why they ended up throwing the ball. And as pointed out by Sean Church on Twitter right now, is that that Jacksonville was putting an nine men in the box, and the Cardinals were still running. But I love, especially of what we've seen the past 3 weeks, is the fact that they've been running the ball. And they've been attempting to do it, even if they weren't successful. They still attempted to do it. And it still ended up with Carson Palmer throwing the ball on. In fact, it just turned out, Bruce Arians commented on Monday when he talked to the media that it kind of was in the game plan that he thought they were going to have a harder time running the ball, and they did based on the personnel matchups, their defensive ends and with the tight ends that the Cardinals have. And so it ended up being that way where they ended up throwing the ball more. But it was kind of just what the doctor ordered, and I hope he can – he's got a three-game roll right now. His first game against St. Louis was solid, and the last 3 weeks have been very, very solid. You wouldn't say elite. I mean, you don't look at him when he plays right now. You don't think, wow. You're just saying, he's having a good game, as opposed to – it's actually more of a case where he's not having a bad game. We haven't had that "what the heck is he doing" throw that typically has. But I really like the Cardinals' chances against offensively. Like, just because they play well at home. They put up 27 points the last three games, so there's something going on right there. I don't know if that answered your question. What was your name on the line there tonight?
Sergio Pignon.
Yeah, thanks for calling it. Does that answer your question, or did you have a take? Well, what do you think is going to happen with the Colts this weekend, at least offensively, with the Cardinals?
Offensively, I think they'll be good if they just keep the passing and rushing balance like they did with the Falcons and Texans. If they could pull that off with Palmer not throwing that much throws, then I think they could pull it off.
Well, great. I appreciate you calling tonight, and thanks for calling the show.
No problem.
So, Seth, do you think that that Carson's going to be able to continue the role? Is he going to be able to play, or are we going to see kind of a – can we expect him to continue this the rest of the season, the decision-maker, or are we going to see him regress in a game or two? Is kind of the clock ticking, is that he's a time bomb waiting to have those games that we've had early in the season, and could that be Indy?
You know, I don't think it's Indy because I just don't think their defense is good enough. A lot of it will depend on Bradley Sowell and what he's able to do against, you know, Mathis, and if he's able to slow Mathis down. You know, but Palmer looks more comfortable in the pocket. I think he's finally figured out that, hey, I'm going to get hit no matter what, so I might as well make sure I'm throwing it to my team as opposed to the other team. And, you know, that's simplistic in its statement, but what ends up happening a lot with Palmer, and you saw it a lot, was he was drifting and then throwing off his back foot, and he wasn't able to get, you know, the necessary velocity on the ball and get it through tight windows. A lot of the throws, you know, you can absolutely say he shouldn't have made, but he made them, and they weren't necessarily bad reads. When you go back and look at them, they were just either the receivers didn't make adjustments on the ball, or he just doesn't have that, you know, extra torque on the ball anymore because he's throwing off his back foot, because he's drifting in the pocket. So, you know, again, you would like to think that the offensive line will be able to hold up against a decent but not really scary Colts pass rush, but I mean, you look at what they did against the Jaguars, and while, you know, they had a good game for their terms, they still gave up two sacks and, you know, four additional quarterback hits against maybe the worst pass rushing team in the NFL. And so that's, you know, it's always a concern with this offensive line. But I think Palmer has become more accustomed to taking the hits, so he's making throws, you know, better throws in this case. And again, one of the things that we've talked about before, they're cutting down on the deep passes. Now, they did take 7 shots this week of 20 plus yards, which was different than weeks before, but that was also in 42 pass attempts. So that was about the same percentage as what they were throwing in the two games previous. So they were definitely working the intermediate routes a little more. They had 12 attempts there. But, you know, what they're doing is they're allowing Palmer to get into a rhythm before they start taking those deep shots, as opposed to coming out of the gate looking for a home run type play, and it's really, I think it's really helping Palmer settle down and then be able to hit things later in the game.
What I kind of like about the offense is we saw more explosive plays or more chunk plays than we have in a lot of weeks. Looking at their stat sheet, they had 6 plays of at least 20 yards. They had the biggest one, obviously, was a play that turned into that. It wasn't a down the field throw with the touchdown pass to Michael Floyd, but there was the 91 yarder, there was a 37 yarder to Floyd, there was a 29 yarder to Jake Ballard, there was another 22 yarder to Floyd, another 22 yarder to Floyd, there was a 21 yarder to Rob Housler. And I was going back over the other games, and against Houston, they only have 3 plays of at least 20 yards. Against Atlanta, they had 4 plays of at least 20 yards. Against Seattle, not a single one, which can kind of tell you why they lost that game. Now, against San Francisco, they had 2. They had 2 plays against San Francisco. Against Carolina, they had 3. And against Tampa Bay happened to be actually their
their best game in terms of chunk plays. They had seven plays of 20 yards or more, but that was back at early in the season when they would just stall after that. They had a 1 of 20, a 21, a 22, a 23, a 25, a 27, and a 29-yarder against Tampa. Against New Orleans, they had three chunk plays of such. And against the Lions, they had four. And against St. Louis in the opener, they had three. And so that, for me, that was actually perhaps one of the biggest things. And aside from the one, aside from the 91-yarder, which was how the league charted was a pass short middle, all six of the other throws, well, actually, four of the other five throws were considered deep throws, which was nice to see. They're probably more of the intermediate routes, but we're seeing them kind of stretch that. And I want to see more than anything. I want to see not so much. I don't care as much about those big deep plays. I like to see effectiveness in the intermediate game because those. If I'm looking back to Kurt Warner days, in 2008 they've had great success down the field. But in 2009 when they won 10 games, they hardly threw the ball down the field. In part the offensive line. In part I think we saw Kurt Warner's arm strength decline a little bit. But they did a lot of work in that intermediate throwing, in that intermediate game. And that's, they kind of use short and intermediate throughout the whole thing, kind of what Ken Wisenhunt, if you look at the Chargers, he does the same thing there, while in 08 you saw the Todd Haley effect. And I like what Carson Palmer is doing, and I'm happy that he's proving me, I don't know, when the trade first went down, I was not thrilled about it, because if there's one thing that I have been convinced of, and it's his track record of, hey, he's put up some gaudy numbers, but he hasn't won games, and kind of quarterback, you have to win games while putting up at least decent numbers, and he hasn't done that. And Palmer was the reason, well, he and Floyd were the reason why the Cardinals won. And that's very, when the defense wasn't playing well early on, Palmer kept them in the game, and the defense clamped down, and then they did it. Moving on from that, talking about from Palmer to Floyd. Floyd had himself a career game. Six catches, 193 yards, that 91-yard touchdown that was really a thing of beauty because he made the catch, and then he wasn't that one-trick pony or just, hey, he went up, got the ball, and then came down. He ran, he shaked tacklers, It wasn't quite Anquan Boldin against the 49ers, but it was really cool to see. And it leads me to think, especially with Michael, that Larry Fitzgerald has played this season or kind of been there. And, yeah, he had some decent numbers, six catches, 61 yards. It's not bad. But is Michael Floyd ready to become the Cardinals' number one receiver? What do you think? Is that what's on the horizon? And is it in the near future?
Well, I think in general, and I've been outspoken against the pick from kind of the jump in terms of the position, not the player that they took. And I have nothing against Floyd. I've always thought he was a nice player. But if you draft a guy at 13 like they did, and you have obvious needs in other places with players that are making as much of or more of an impact because they don't need the ball in their hands to make an impact. And that's taking away from Floyd's skill as a blocker, which he might be the best blocking wide receiver in the NFL already. But, you know, you don't draft a guy 13 to be a run-blocking wide receiver. So, you know, it's hard to justify that pick when you aren't getting the playmaker the ball. So when he has a game like that, and while it's, you know, an absolutely phenomenal game, especially for a year two guy, you look at it and you say, okay, that's kind of what I expect from a guy that's drafted 13th overall, ahead of guys that can maybe could have protected the quarterback and done, you know, and filled bigger needs at the time. And so the natural progression of Floyd to the number one wide receiver was absolutely, you know, it was absolutely a huge part of that pick. And if, you know, obviously it has to happen in order for the pick to be a success, because even it's okay to draft a number two wide receiver in the first round at pick 13 if you have a team that is a number two wide receiver away from competing, but it's not okay to even draft a number one wide receiver in the top 13 when you have so many other gaping holes. And so his progression is on the right track. It's now kind of about, can they find and fill the holes around him to allow him to be worth what they spent on him? Because what it may end up being, and you know, people aren't going to like this, but what it may end up costing this team more than anything is kind of the last few years of Larry Fitzgerald's career, because they're going to be able to say, okay, we have, you know, a number one wide receiver. We don't need to pay Larry Fitzgerald anymore. Either he takes a pay cut or, you know, God forbid, we have to release him. And that's down the line, and we're in a good spot, so I don't want to talk about that kind of stuff. But that to me is kind of where the progression of Floyd has to go in order for anything to be considered a success. But, yeah, I think he's on his way.
Well, and something like – and the thing is, I think of it – well, yes, we're in a good place as Cardinals fans because the team is winning, and we're going through just a couple of weeks ago, is Larry Fitzgerald on the trading block? Are we going to trade him? Is he going to be cut? He's making too much money. But when you see a game like what Michael Floyd had, you're like, hey, is this what we're seeing? Is this kind of when we're seeing Marvin Harrison – bowing down, at least to fading, stepping down a little bit to see Reggie Wayne flower and blossom and become the number one? I was always worried. The one thing is that Michael Floyd, that it wouldn't quite be the same dynamic as Larry Fitzgerald and Anquan Boldin, for one, because Anquan Boldin had already been for the team with the year before Fitzgerald came around, and two, just because of the personality Anquan Boldin is, it's the toughest, meanest, most competitive player you're ever going to meet. Extremely proud man. And Floyd, being a wide receiver, he's still a very soft-spoken. He goes about his business. He's got a great. He works hard, but the thing that's different is he doesn't have that outward fire that Anquan Boldin. So it wasn't going to be a case of he's number two. He was insulted that he was considered number two. He was 1A, 1B. So you had two number ones. With Michael Floyd in the mix, with Fitz around, was he ever going to become the same type of impact player that Anquan Boldin was? That was the question. And then the next question is, if Floyd can do this, can he and Larry Fitzgerald coexist in that passing offense? Or will it cost us Fitz? We could talk about that another time, but I find that dynamic interesting. Is Fitz ready to, as much as he plays for team, and he does, because he says everything, he does everything based on team, he does care about his legacy, will he be willing to be a number two guy on a team that he's the only team he's ever played with? On a separate note, what I really like, and I think what with the performance that we've seen from Floyd this week and Rob House with the past two, I think it is actually has more to do, it's the reason rather than the individual players coming out, is we have more reason as Arizona Cardinals fans to be hopeful and excited for the next 6 weeks, because as we saw with Ray Horton's defense in 2011, it took about half the season and things started to click. I think that's what's happening with this Arizona offense. Is that all offseason, what did everyone talk about? Michael Floyd, Rob Houser, they're going to break out. They're going to have breakout seasons. They're going to put up mad numbers. The first half of the season, you know, Floyd was doing all right. Rob Houser, absolutely invisible. But what have we seen the last 2 weeks? We saw Michael Floyd put up a monster game. We saw Rob Houser put up two very good games. And Larry Fitzgerald had okay numbers. I think we're at the point where the Arizona Cardinals offense is finally clicking. And no longer, I don't think we're going to see, while it might not be consistent all the time, we put up 27 points the last 3 weeks. It's no longer inept. And if I'm an Arizona Cardinal, and I am, that's what has me the most excited, because the defense is playing well, but the offense, my goodness, it's come around. Do you see it that way? Do you see that the offense has come around, and that is why we're seeing Floyd and Hauser put up the numbers that they have the past couple of weeks?
Well, I think from where they were at the bye week, and the Falcons game going into the bye week was very important, because what it did was it kind of showed Carson Palmer that, hey, you don't have to carry this team. The defense is good enough that if you don't make mistakes, this team is going to win ball games. And, you know, and you don't ever want to say a lot of ball games, but they can win a lot of ball games because, you know, if he doesn't make mistakes. You know, obviously the running game is still not where you want it. That's a combination of I don't even know what it's a combination of. I asked about Andre Ellington during the game, and I was behind in the game. I recorded it and watched it later, and I was charting the game, and one of the things I found interesting, maybe I just found it interesting, maybe I'm the only one, but I found it interesting that Andre Ellington only got consecutive carries once in the entire game. You know, they did not put the ball in his hands consecutively and kind of let him get into a flow. And he's not a guy like Rashard Mendenhall where he needs, you know, 20 carries to get into a flow. But they spaced out his carries and his touches so much that there was no, you could tell that there was no rhythm for the offensive line. There was no rhythm for an Andre Ellington to kind of get into a flow of making plays. And that, I think that had a little bit to do with the subparness of his game. But going back to your question, honestly, there was really nowhere to go for it but up. I mean, the 29th rated offense in the NFL is, you know, really bad. And it was kind of at the point where it was put up or shut up time. Either you become a good offense or you're going to lose another season of great defense, you know, albeit a different defense, but a probably better defense than you've had in the last 2 years, and you're going to just waste another season, and you're going to find a way to squander what could have been a great season because you can't get the offense going. And I think that, like I said, that Atlanta game really showed Carson Palmer, hey, you don't have to be the man when we need you to be the man. And it looked like they did in Jacksonville with the 42 pass attempts. We'll ask that of you, and you know, but we're not going to expect you every Sunday to go out there and be Peyton Manning or, you know, even Andrew Luck. We just need you to go out there, not turn the ball over, make good decisions, move the ball around efficiently, and you know, kind of flip field position, if you will, because guess what? The defense is going to get it back for you, and then you'll have a shorter field to work with. So I think the offense really didn't have anywhere to go but up, and they've answered that call. And, you know, now all of a sudden, you know, it's two games, so you don't want to get too ahead of yourself and say, oh yeah, they're for real, they're legit. But you look at the schedule, and outside of Tennessee, Seattle, San Francisco kind of end of the season thing, there's really no reason that they shouldn't put up big numbers, because the other defenses they face are not good. And, you know, we already saw them put up big numbers against the Rams once away, you know, and now this offense should be more in tune and, you know, more comfortable with each other. And the Eagles defense is not good. So you really look at it and you say, okay, maybe the next 4 weeks they'll get into enough of a rhythm that come Tennessee, Seattle, San Francisco, it won't be the, you know, mess we saw against other really good defenses in the NFL.
And This is courtesy of Sean, and I have this information as well in the from the team that they released, and I believe I had some of this on the offensive facts. Just how good was Floyd's game? It was a franchise record for a second year receiver with his 193 yards. He bested David Boston's 184 yards that he logged in the year 2000. We're going to segue this play of the offense right into the playoff talk, and you talk about, well, the offense should continue to put up these numbers based on who they're going to be playing. They're going to play Indy, they're going to play Philly, they're going to play St. Louis. They've already shown they can put up points against St. Louis, and Philly's defense doesn't really stop anyone. However, the key is to stop their offense, as Nick Foles has been playing fantastic. And then you've got Indianapolis this weekend. How in this really are they? Obviously, right now, the Cardinals sit as the seventh seed. They're tied record-wise with the San Francisco 49ers by nature of their loss to the 49ers. San Francisco holds the tiebreak between the two. They sit at number seven. They've got, right now, Carolina and San Francisco are the wild card teams if the season ended today. I think, if we rewind 3 weeks ago, before we had these games, for me, now I'm already getting excited, but when we finished that Seattle game and we were looking ahead to that first game against Atlanta, to consider them in the playoff race or to make these, are these pretenders, are they contenders, what did they have to do to prove yourself to them? I said really 3-1 was the minimum, but really they needed to go 4-0. And I'm going to kind of stick to that. Against Indianapolis, unless they beat Indianapolis this weekend, well, if they beat Indianapolis, then I'm going to be all right, this team is really in the mix. They don't beat Indianapolis. They made their road really difficult. I personally believe I had this game as a loss looking back before the season started. I had this game as a loss, and I have them winning in Philadelphia. But if they lose against Indianapolis, I don't see them being able to, they're on the outside looking in, having to hope for other scenarios to fall into place. I don't know about you. How, based on just right now, would you say that they're in this thing? And I know you have an article that you submitted. I have scheduled to go up tomorrow morning about what you think the Cardinals need to do. And I don't want to spoil it for you, so you tell us, are the Cardinals really in it, and what do they got to do?
You know, they are in it, and it's simply because they have played themselves to this point. Basically, what it boils down to is this. Win or lose on Sunday, it's not going to take them out of the playoff race. But as you said, it's going to make their lives much, much tougher. You look at the teams that are in that kind of 5-5 and even go down to the 4-6. And if you end up at 6-5, you're all of a sudden you're creeping into teams like Green Bay, who's going to have Aaron Rodgers back in a couple weeks. Dallas, who is a mess defensively, but they play in the NFC East, so they could end up, you know, winning all their NFC East games remaining, and, you know, that could be a problem. And even the New York Giants, who are all of a sudden on a semi-hot streak, and you look at it, and they've won 4 in a row, and their schedule kind of sets up nicely for them. You want to win this game on Sunday in the worst way, not just because it is, you know, important for the playoff race, but there's no talk about this Cardinals team. Carson Palmer did a couple of spots on the radio today, and, you know, Bruce Arians had a nice little segment that Sean emailed us about. But realistically, there's no conversation. Nobody, and you don't mean it in this way, but nobody cares about this team. You know, nobody says, hey, you know who the last team to beat down the Carolina Panthers was? Oh, it was the Arizona Cardinals. You know, and it wasn't just, you know, oh, the Cardinals squeaked by. They literally beat down the Carolina Panthers. I mean, they dominated them from the second half on to a point where, you know, it was a really great game for them and kind of set things in motion for that defense. But when you look at it overall, they're in this thing until the end because their schedule kind of sets up nicely for them where they really don't have a game where you say, man, this is going to be – and every game in the NFL is you know, important and is a game that could be lost. But you don't look at any of these games and go, man, until the Seattle game, you don't look at it and say, man, this is going to be really hard. You look at it and say, these are winnable games. These are games that the Cardinals should be favored in. I mean, that's crazy to think that we would be sitting at week 12 in the NFL season and the Arizona Cardinals would be home favorites against the Indianapolis Colts, the second place in the AFC Indianapolis Colts, mind you. So I think, you know, they have to come out and make a statement for the league to kind of take notice that, hey, you know what, these guys are for real. I put on Twitter the other day that I found it interesting that the league doesn't find Arizona, Philadelphia a possible battle of playoff teams, especially if Arizona wins on Sunday, you know, doesn't find that matchup interesting enough to flex that to Sunday night football. But you know what? They have the opportunity to do. They have the opportunity to win enough games to have their last game of the season flex to Sunday night football and be for, you know, a playoff berth against the rival San Francisco 49ers and then kind of let the chips fall where they may. And that's what they really need to look forward to at this point, is just putting themselves in a position to win game or to make the playoffs just by winning games. Don't worry about what anybody else does and just do you.
All right, we have a caller on the line. Let's see if I can get this on. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. This is Jeff speaking. Who is this on the line?
Hey, what's up? It's Elwood, and I'm calling from Indianapolis, Indiana, home of the Colts.
Oh, you're up late tonight. Thanks for calling in, Elwood.
No, I just got off work, and I thought, oh, I got to hear what these birds are saying. Hey, I don't think the season's over for the Cards if they can't beat the Colts. But, I mean, they're not going to beat the Colts. But I don't think you guys should write that off and say you're done. Bruce Arians is a genius. I love that guy. I mean, I don't blame him for taking the shiny brass ring when they offered it, but this guy's going to get you places, you know. I don't think, you know, I mean, they're not going to stop Andrew Luck and the Colts, but I wouldn't write off your season, you know. This is the most relevant you guys have been in a long time. You guys should be proud. You know, that was a genius move getting Arian out there. And I think your team's got some potential. I wouldn't put too much stock in Sunday's game. I mean, this is the Colts we're talking about. They took down Peyton Manning in his own house. You know, and as long as they don't have a brain fart like when they played the Rams, this team is tough to beat. You know, Andrew Luck's the next big thing. He's the next Peyton Manning. You know, I said it's like we chopped off Peyton Manning's head and Andrew Luck's popped up. It's the darndest thing I've ever seen. You know, the only difference is I was in the Hoosier Dome the sophomore year Peyton was here, and he didn't look this good. So, yeah, I look for the Colts to win easy Sunday, but I don't write that Cards off. You know, the only problem is your Philadelphia game's going to be more trouble than I thought, because we were joking around the Battle of the Birds. Arizona's going to kick some butt. But I tell you what, this Nick Foles kid is good, and I think he may give him some fits. You know, this is – I don't think anyone took Nick Foles seriously because he doesn't look like a quarterback. But he turned out to be pretty good. So, actually, that's a game I wasn't too interested in. Now I'm really looking forward to. So,
Well, I would appreciate the call. That great insight coming from a guy from Indianapolis.
Not a problem. And I wish the game was here. So I hope you guys go. It's going to – ain't nothing like a Colts game. Good stuff.
You know? All right. Thank you, sir.
So, go Blue.
Well, I'm not going to quite say go blue, but because I'm definitely going go red. He is right in the fact that the season isn't over, and I think we both have been saying that. I just, you've said it, I said it, it's just going to make their playoff lives very difficult. And the narrative that we want to, as fans, we want to see being written in the media, we don't want that narrative to be the same thing as 2008, the worst playoff team in the history of the game. and when we have a home game against a big team, those are games that we have to win.
Well, and one of the things in that is, you know, you said, right, you know, you don't want people to write about the narrative that this is the worst playoff team ever. But the other thing you do want is you just want somebody to write something about this team. You know, you don't want to have to go to a team-specific site like Revenge of the Birds or like, you know, Sean at Bleacher Report or Arizona Sports and to get all your Cardinals information. And trust me, we love your hits. We love your, you know, coming to us. But you know what? We want you to not have to seek out Cardinals information on just team-specific sites to get any information about the Cardinals. And that's, you know, that's really what they're fighting for at this point. They're fighting for relevance in a league where you're only relevant if you are in a big market or you win. The Cardinals are never going to be in that first, you know, that first category. Arizona, despite the, you know, the population and the landscape, is not a big sports market. It is not a great sports market at all. But you know what? If you win games, you're relevant, and people have to stand up and take notice of what you're doing. And, you know, you don't – like we both said, it's not over if they lose on Sunday. It's just going to make it much harder. But you know what? Nobody's going to talk about you. Nobody's going to talk about you again until you're, you know, knocking on the doorstep of the playoffs. And if you lose on Sunday, it's going to be the Colts won a game they should have won. We don't understand why they weren't favored, and you know this. Everybody expected this, and that's what you want to fight, and that's what you want to get away from. You want to be relevant in this league, and the Cardinals are on the cusp of that nationally. I mean, obviously they're relevant here and to us. I mean, we do all this, you know, writing and a weekly show for, you know, because we love the Cardinals, but it would be nice if people stood up and paid attention to this team, and it wasn't, you know, just because they were diehard fans, the, you know, 20,000 of us diehard fans that there are.
So bottom line, coming to this weekend now, I'm trying to get some details hammered out so that I can get either somebody from Stampede Blue over our SB Nation Colts blog, I can bring them on. I haven't had that show, my Thursday night show, for a couple of weeks, and I've been missing that. So you've been missing out on some great interviews. Haven't been able to nail that down. But bottom line, if this is the last time we hear about Cardinals-Colts before we return next Tuesday night on Revenge of the Birds Radio, is... So, Seth, prediction time. What do you think the Cardinals do? Do you think they win? What score? Do they continue the narrative, or do they fade away into forgetfulness around the league of irrelevance?
You know, I think in the end what it's going to come down to is there are a couple things. It's going to be about Carson Palmer's ability to limit turnovers still. You know, he's on a nice little streak that everybody's been pointing out for three games. Unfortunately, three games does not a season make, so he's got to continue that, you know. And it's going to also come down to stopping T.Y. Hilton and the big play of the Colts offense. The Cardinals defense has been, you know, has given up some big plays lately, and that's one of the things that needs to be limited. The other thing that I was actually going to write about this week for the game is how big of a factor will T.Y. Hilton be in the return game without their best special teamer in Justin Bethel. You know, I don't know if he's going to play. I'm waiting to write this article just in case, you know, he does get healthier. But a concussion, you really are likely just to miss the next game, especially with the savage hit he took. So how much of a factor is T.Y. Hilton going to be in the return game? Are they going to be able to stop them? you know, it's Tuesday. A lot of things are going to change between now and Sunday, but I think this is a winnable game for the Cardinals, and I think that they can come out on top. I'm not going to pick them because then I'm going to jinx it, but I really do think this is a winnable game just because this is the type of matchup they need against a bad defense where their offense can continue to get on track and ready to roll.
And I'm going to go a little bit further than that. I equate this game very much to that 07 game that the Cardinals hosted against the Steelers in Ken Wisenhunt's first year, and they came away with a win. And there's something to that recency and that familiarity with a coach that just left who kind of knows the trade secrets and is emotionally fired up. The players are fired up for their coach. And you add into the mix that the Cardinals are relevant right now. They're in the playoff mix. They're going to come out. And truth be told, the Colts are not the same team without Reggie Wayne, as the play against the Rams showed. You saw even the game against the Texans. They were getting their pants beat off against Houston, and they came back with that second half magic. With Andrew Luck time. I think the Cardinals are going to do to Indianapolis what they did in 07 to the Steelers. And I'm expecting, I not only hope, I will be, at this point, that's what I feel they need to do, and I think they will. I think they're going to put 30-plus points on the board. I think they're going to win by 9 or 10 points, probably. I think by a pretty good margin. And we're going to hear Cardinals fans going crazy. We're going to see the bandwagon start back up. We will be back on Revenge of the Birds Radio, guaranteed next Tuesday night, as we always are, if I can get arrangements set up to talk to Bradley Wells or one of the other staff writers over there at StampedeBlue.com. I will have that up for you on Thursday night. In the meantime, this is Jess Root. You've been listening to me and my co-host Seth Cox on Revenge of the Birds Radio. And you can find us at RevengeOfTheBirds.com. You can follow us on Twitter. You can download the episodes archived at iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at BlogTalkRadio.com/RevengeOfTheBirds. On behalf of Seth and myself, have a good night. Thank you for listening. Come back next week. Have a great night, Seth. Thanks for coming on tonight.
Have a good night.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting RevengeOfTheBirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at Facebook.com/RevengeOfTheBirds.
Oh, look, they put it in the local paper.
Really?
Tom and Mary Wainthorpe are proud to announce the engagement of their daughter, Carrie, to Gareth Shadwell.
Oh.
5-door hatchback for sale. One previous owner, 46,000 miles, full service history, 3 months MOT.
Like getting your money's worth? Try our Mayo Chicken, made using only tasty chicken breast meat. Just 99p from the McDonald's Saver menu. From 10:30 a.m., price of participation may vary.